Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And a very, very good evening to everyone out there. You are tuned in to another edition of Contact, and this is your host, Leslie Mitchell Clark. And I'm so pleased that you could join us on this very wintry evening. We're here in the Northeast, and we have a severe cold warning going on, and I just would hope that everyone out there could extend themselves to just say an intention that everyone who needs shelter this evening will receive it, safe shelter. So that's what we have going on in our wonderful town of Toronto. So I'm so pleased that you've joined us this evening, and we're going to take a little bit of a departure from our usual ufology-focused programming this evening, and I am so pleased to welcome to the program Toronto-based High Priest of the Wiccan Mystics Coven, metaphysician, and paranormal investigator Gregory Pulaski. Gregory Pilarski, excuse me. Apologies, Gregory. Gregory Pilarski. And we're going to be taking, along with Gregory, a brief detour, and we're going to be delving into the subjects of magic, hauntings, paranormal investigations, spirit photography, orbs, and much, much more. And just a few words about Gregory before we welcome him to the show. Now, he's a very fascinating guy. As I mentioned, he is the High Priest of the Wiccan Mystics Coven from October 31st, 2014, to the present. And he's actually a very young guy, but he's been meditating for over 15 years and has been actively practicing magic now for approximately the past 5 years. And in September of 2013, he began to document paranormal, supernatural phenomena with both EVP, of course, electric voice recordings, photographs, and also video. He was very determined to explore the realm of spirits. He also experienced several UFO sightings, and certainly he's done plenty of benevolent home blessings. He's cleansed and blessed homes. He's participated in rituals to remove unwanted spirits or demons, and he is currently teaching magic and has been doing so for 3 years. So we're very, very happy to welcome to the show Gregory Pilarski. And I should mention that we are live this evening, folks. This is a live broadcast. And if you would care to call in, you may do so. If you're within Canada or elsewhere, the number is 424-220-1861. And if you're calling in from the United States, that number is 888-891-3884. And I should also mention that our chat room is open and available, and Wes Roberts is at his remote headquarters, and he's monitoring the chat room and will be calling into us a bit later on. So there you go. Without further ado, I am going to welcome to Contact for the first time Gregory Pilarski. And I think I've got him right here. Hey, Gregory, is that you?
Hello, Leslie. I think you've got Wes.
Oh, Wes. Okay, I'm looking for Gregory. I don't see him on the line here as of yet. Apologies for not recognizing your secret code phone number here. I should explain to the folks out in radio land, in interweb radio land, that I have a virtual switchboard here, so I just simply did not recognize the producer of the show's phone number. Excellent.
Okay, no, we are here. We are here together. I suspect Gregory will be calling in within a minute or two, so we're good.
I'm sure that he will, and I'm so excited. And we've only had on a couple of occasions someone who could really speak to not only Wiccan practice, but how it relates to the really important studies of metaphysics and paranormal research. So I'm really, really happy that we're going to be able to speak to Gregory in just a bit. Now, you yourself, Wes, are no stranger to the practice of magic. Is that not
That's
the
right.
case?
Yes, that's true. What Gregory might do and what I might do would be two very different things. But magic's an interesting thing, and I don't know what our guests will say about this, but from my perspective, it's almost about wishing for something to come true and then focusing your wish.
Mm-hmm.
It really
so it's
is
a
just
focus.
A case of intent.
It's a manifestation, I guess. Then you would say it's an intention and a manifestation of intention.
Oh yeah, that's an absolutely great way to put it. And it's you know, some people draw on symbols. Some people that say call forth gods and goddesses. Some people do certain steps or incantations. It depends which variety of magic you belong to.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
You know, in my own opinion, I think the more adept you become at it, the more likely you don't need anything else but your own mind.
That makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, the idea of ritual is a structure that then sort of triggers the alpha waves and, you know, allows you to be perhaps receptive or to get to a place within yourself that might be more difficult to reach otherwise.
Oh, I would agree with that. You know, if all mysteries are contained within, then we just need to dig a little more deeply. And I just
indeed.
Need to interrupt you for one short sec. I've got one of our favorite guests is in the chat room, James Borg, and he says he's not hearing anything, so... Is there anything strange going on in your switchboard there?
Nothing. Everything looks A-okay. We're on the air. We're having a countdown. I'm online. The switchboard is up. I can't really imagine what the issue might be, but from my end, everything looks completely good. And of course, we are in fact communicating, which indicates that we are live.
Okay. Well, I will keep on the chat room, and I'll try and pull up another window where I can see if I can hear us live as well. In the meantime, if you want to start to thank our sponsors, I'll do that for you in the background.
All right. That sounds fantastic, because without our sponsors, there would be no Contact Radio, that is for sure. And at the very top of the list of our favorite sponsors would be, of course, the Euphoria Organization, led by James Borg. And, of course, our good friend Carl Dory is involved as well, and many of our wonderful friends in ufology. So the Euphoria Organization is incredibly supportive. And you can reach them simply by going to meetup.com. And you don't have to be in the Toronto area, although we are Toronto-based because we are international. And there is also a new Facebook page and also a new television channel on YouTube, and that is called the Euphoria Chronicles. So you can find out a little bit more about what we're up to by investigating that both on Facebook and on YouTube. We would also like to thank our friend Patrick White and his lovely wife at Conspiracy Culture. And Conspiracy Culture is not only a fantastic bookstore and resource, but Patrick White himself is a promoter of many incredible events that happen throughout the year. In fact, he is one of the promoters of the Coast to Coast AM annual visitation by George Norrie, which we do at the Queen Elizabeth Theater. So, Patrick White, we thank you for all of your support. He's also involved with the upcoming Alien Cosmic Expo, which is going to be this summer, the 26th, 27th, 28th of June in Brantford, Ontario. And you can simply go online, and we have an incredible lineup of people, and yours truly is going to be emceeing, and also Wes Roberts and myself will be doing a bit of a presentation. So Alien Cosmic Expo. All right, so we thanked Patrick White. We'd like to thank Enchanted Reveries Jewelry. In fact, I'm just going to play their little theme song just to make sure that everything is working. Enchanted Reveries, metaphysical jewelry with a touch of magic to inspire the spirit. Earrings, bracelets, and necklaces handcrafted from semi-precious gemstones, sterling silver, silver-plated pewter, and other symbolic and colorful ingredients. EnchantedReveries.etsy.com. That's EnchantedReveries.etsy.com. All right, our friends at Enchanted Reveries, and we are looking forward to seeing some more wonderful jewelry from them in the very near future. Well, we're here waiting for our good friend Gregory Pilarski to call in. Wes, have you done a little diagnostic on what's going on here?
I did. I opened another window because we do have technical problems on Blog Talk Radio from time to time. So I opened a second window outside of the studio, which you and I use, as if you were just dialing into the internet to listen to the show, and it's streaming just fine. So there might be some periodic or episodic, I guess I would say, issues out there, but I didn't hear them. In fact, I just muted my speakers here so that we couldn't hear any interference. So I would say to you out there, if you're having a problem listening to us, maybe if we're not loud enough or something, please try again. Refresh your web page, which is always a good idea. And to do that, you can just press your F5 key, and it will refresh your web page. And once again, I've just muted our speakers, so I know the show is streaming live.
All right. Well, we're good to go, and I thanked everybody and talked a little bit about the Alien Cosmic Expo, which we're, of course, incredibly excited about. And we're just waiting for Gregory to call in. He was going to be calling in at about 9:05, and haven't been able to see him show up on the virtual switchboard as of yet, but I'm going to send him a little email now, and hopefully that will get things going. So Wes, I wanted to tell you, since we are talking this evening about essentially magic, hauntings, paranormal investigations, you know, spirit photography, and all the rest of it, there is a haunted location in Toronto that I think that we and possibly some of our colleagues should investigate. And it came to my attention. My husband is a adjunct professor at the University of Toronto in the jazz department, the music department, and the area where the jazz department is now located is apparently the former divinity school. Had a much older structure. Now, the original structure of the Divinity School, I think, has been raised because the building itself looks like some kind of 1960s nightmare. If you ask me, I mean, it sticks out like a sore thumb. It doesn't correspond to any of the architecture that we love so much, any of the 18th century architecture from the UT. But as I understand it, the lower floors and the basement are part of the original structure, and at one time, acted as dormitories. And apparently, according to my husband, who is not given to flights of fancy, the lower areas are so full of phenomena and uncomfortable occurrences that no one even wants to go down there.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know that we know someone as well, and I won't mention her name, who works for one of the many colleges under the U of T. So I am going to actually try and ask her a question while we're sort of gearing up to talk about these kinds of things. And if you want to do your little email, Leslie, I can just talk a little bit more about the Alien Cosmic Expo as well.
That would be wonderful, yes. Please do that. I'm just going to send Gregory a little email and a Facebook message and see if we can get him to chime in. But, yes, that would be great. So let's talk a little bit more about the Alien Cosmic Expo, and then we'll segue into our upcoming investigation at the University of Toronto.
Okay, folks. So if you've not seen the website yet for the Alien Cosmic Expo, this is a big deal. And I'm not just saying that because Leslie is going to MC it and we'll be there the whole time. And I'm not just saying that because she and I will be presenting a workshop, a lecture as well. It's such a huge deal because thanks to the organizers and thanks to Leslie, the guests that have been lined up for this Canadian show, and this is not far outside of Toronto, I should tell you, if you're trying to get your geography worked out, it's about an hour away from Toronto or so in Brantford. But the Alien Cosmic Expo is taking place on June 26th, 27th, 28th of this year. And so you can go to their website. It's aliencosmicexpo.com. So it's all one word, .com. And the show that's taking place over 3 days and three nights is going to feature information about UFOs, extraterrestrials, out-of-the-body experiences, alien encounters, past and interlife regression, and soul reading. And the list of guests is really a list of who's who in all those fields, including the UFO field. For instance, Stanton Friedman, our good friend, who recently suffered a heart attack, is back on task and very busy and coming to see us at the expo. And he's not the only one coming. Grant Cameron is coming. So imagine these names, Stanton Friedman, Grant Cameron, Jason Martell, and other names as well. Incredible list of guests that are coming to the show. Leslie and I will be there. I believe Leslie will be there for all 3 days, and I'll certainly be there for the day that we're presenting. And I should say to you that they're all also calling for exhibitors. So if you go to the website and just click the little tag that says exhibitors, the tab that says exhibitors, you can fill out a form, and it's a call for exhibitors. And so all you have to do is fill in a few fields. And the fields involve, of course, your name, your business name, if you wish to give it. Your email address is essential. Website, if you wish to give it. A little box lets you describe your product or your service, which you have to fill in, and you also have to fill in your phone number. And like any event, folks, I'd have to tell you, you need to specify whether or not you need electricity, electrical outlets. Once you do that, those few things take you maybe 5 minutes. You just click submit, and the organizers will be in touch with you. And so other guests, in addition to the ones I just mentioned, and Leslie and myself, will be Michael Telstar, who's presenting and probably demonstrating remote viewing. We've had him on the show before. Larry Campbell with Messages from the Ancients. Victor Vigiani, a friend of MUFON and UFORIA, will speak about the UFOs and government media, Mendacity. I mentioned Len Kasten. Len Kasten's most well-known for the Planet Serpo book and others, and we've had Len on the show. It's just going to be an extraordinary event happening this June, and we really, really hope that you'll come by, say hello, introduce yourself, and also we're always looking for new guests. So you can come up and let Leslie or I know, hey, we've got something to say. Can you have us on the show? So how about
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. We are a forum for all types of thought. As we mentioned before, we're primarily UFOria focused, ufology focused, but certainly we are wide open to a wide range of subject matter dealing with healing and well-being, and of course magic and ancient aliens and spirit encounters and all that kind of stuff. So if you think you'd like to join us, you can always reach us by email. You can reach our producer, Wes Roberts, at contact.producer@gmail.com, and that'll get you right through. Okay, well, you know what, Wes? I'm not exactly sure what has happened with Gregory Pilarski. I have emailed him and Facebook messaged him.
Well, hopefully nothing untoward. I had sent him a message an hour or two ago as well, as we always try to confirm with our guests, because occasionally there's communication mix-ups. If our guest shows up, that'd be perfect. We'll go for it. If he doesn't,
okay,
I guess we'll just keep chatting about what we're up to.
All right. Well, anyway, speaking further about this haunting at the University of Toronto former Divinity School or Theology School, I have to go over there, I think, probably and interview some students to find out exactly what type of phenomena that they are talking about, whether we're dealing with poltergeist-type phenomena or whether people are being touched or have had visual sightings or simply are having, you know, really uncomfortable feelings of being watched. So all of those things would sort of, you know, fall in line. And I kind of think that, you know, anywhere, and this again is in keeping with our good friend Barry Taft's ideas, I think that any place where you have young people and you have a lot of kinetic energy going on, I think that there would be an increase in phenomena, and that some of it may not necessarily be what we would call an intelligent haunt, but some of it may simply be just the physics of kinetic energy.
That sounds logical to me. You know, there's books out there, and I'm trying to make sure I don't mess up the title of this. I think Houses That Kill is one of them. But there are books out there that talk about energy, spirit energy, being trapped in the fabric of a house, mm-hmm. being trapped in the walls, in the architecture, in the furniture. And sometimes if a piece of furniture is removed, as happened with one of my sisters, the ghost goes with it because the ghost came with it. So I don't know if that means the ghost is an intelligent entity in that case, but there are cases where it's almost like you hit a replay button when you go into a house because something's in the very fabric of the house that keeps resending its transmission.
Absolutely. And, of course, we know, you know, we're talking a little bit about what is commonly called the stone tape theory. That there are certain substances, particularly, you know, granite and crystal. And boy, do we have a lot of granite in Ontario. We're right here at the Canadian Shield. So, but the composition of stone specifically is known to absorb energies. And so that's why we get, you know, when we often see, you know, free repeating haunts. In other words, simply someone going through the same action again and again and again, rather, and usually a translucent image, not something that seems overly solid. I really think that is what we're talking about. We're talking about a type of recording on the ethers. I know that there's even been some experimentation with attempting to elicit sounds out of pottery, ancient pottery. And there have been some results with this. So,
wow.
if sound waves could be, you know, trapped in the molecular structure of a natural substance, then certainly anything with high emotion, anything involving EMF emanations, anything like that. And of course, you know, according to our friend Dr. Barry Taff, I mean, in his philosophy and in his research, he really thinks that the vast majority of all hauntings are not what we would call intelligent hauntings, but simply manipulations of energy, sometimes by the subconscious minds of the people that are even experiencing the haunt.
Yeah, the whole idea of the subconscious mind, we couldn't explore in our lifetimes, I don't think, and certainly not on this show and give it its fair due. But what the subconscious informs us all the time. I think most of us would take that for granted, or at least are aware of it. So what happens in the subconscious and what happens in the conscious? I think there's this filter going on where the conscious gets very little, actually, of what's in the subconscious, only little bits, only as it can handle it, and often it's diluted. It's not pure, it's not clear, and that's what we have to go on.
Well, you're absolutely right. In fact, you know, just, you know, speaking as a hypnotherapist for just a moment, I mean, we are taught from the very, very beginning that the biggest part of us is the subconscious mind, and a really helpful analogy would be to think about an iceberg. And, you know, the little tiny part that's sticking up, you know, above the ocean, that essentially represents our conscious mind. And the huge structure that we don't see, you know, beneath the ocean, that is the subconscious. That's where behaviors are formed. That's where ideas can turn into, you know, either something positive or something negative. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, our subconscious mind is incredibly literal. It's totally literal. It also, and this is closer to the nature of reality, I think, than our conscious mind, the subconscious mind doesn't understand tenses like past, present, and future. That is a construct that we use with our conscious minds to create linear activities so that we agree on our timeline and we can accomplish stuff together. But in reality, the human mind doesn't perceive time in that way at all. So it's endlessly fascinating, but I do think there is I do think that Barry Taff has some very fascinating research to back up his ideas, and we should probably remember that he was certainly on the ground floor of psychic investigations. He was involved with UCLA's, you know, short-lived program where they were researching psychic occurrences, and you know, he had the opportunity to do a lot of field research as a young man, a lot of field research. And even without a lot of the, you know, the rigmarole, a lot of the electronics that we have today, you know, no, I think they might have had, you know, an EMF meter, but they certainly didn't have small handheld recorders. They didn't have digital technology. They didn't have Barry Taff and his crew didn't have. It's amazing, actually, how little they actually had.
Well, I think they relied more on their smarts than on machinery, nothing being wrong with machinery, of course. And Dr. Taft's a guest we've had on the show a couple of times. He's a great guest, really, really interesting guy. And I'm just going to interrupt us for one sec here because one of our friends is in the chat room, and I invited him to call in if he wants to. So I'm going to shout out our phone number again. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
So that would be our friend James, and the phone number is 1-424-220-1861. And that's not just for James, our pal, but it's for anyone that wants to call in. If you're in the U.S., the call is free, 1-888-891-3884. So I am staffing the chat room, and we'll see if James is able to pop up. And while we're waiting for him, I just wanted to mention, Leslie, I've been in a little communication with someone who looks like it's going to be one of our new friends who hosts Cosmic Horizons Radio.
Oh,
and,
excellent.
Yeah, James Harp. I hope that's how you pronounce his name. James is having on his show, James's show tomorrow, Patrick White. And you mentioned Patrick White, and Patrick White will be on his show tomorrow at 6:30, Cosmic Horizons Radio.
Now, is this an online broadcast, Wes?
You know, I it's difficult to find out. It is a Blog Talk Radio thing, but it seems that Mr. Harp has more bells and whistles than we might. So it seems that it is an online radio show, and it's a half an hour show, if I'm not mistaken. So, friends, if you're a fan of Patrick White, and we sure are, and conspiracy culture, tomorrow night, Monday night at 6:30 ET, Cosmic Horizons Radio on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we will certainly be listening into that. And then Patrick has been on our show before, of course, and I'm very, very happy to hear about this programming because any like-minded people are helping to raise the consciousness and, you know, affect positive change, which we certainly need at this particular time. And speaking of positive change, back to our topics of hauntings.
Yes.
Now we had a chance, you and I, Wes, and your wife, lovely Lisa. We had a chance to do what I would call a spirit rescue not all that long ago. And it was, and I can tell you that I have checked up on the space, and the space is still clean.
And, that was an interesting night. We've talked about it a little bit before, Leslie, but you've been, because you have a connection with the building, you've been to this place since then. And certainly it was a bit, it was a combination of being depressing and sad and not gleeful at the end of the night, but we all felt helpful at the end of the night, didn't we?
Yeah, there was a sense of relief, and as we all, you know, as we all worked together, you know, we were at a location where a terrible violent murder had occurred, and it was our feeling, and certainly the phenomena and the staff of the building were all being so affected. It was our consensus that this poor woman, this poor victim, had not moved on; that she was trapped in a state of fear, and which would be, you know, certainly understandable. So we investigated. We got some EVPs. We got some orbs. And certainly we then filled the space with light. And I had the very strong impression that an older, like, European woman looked like a Greek grandmother. You know, she was wearing her, she had those kinds of stockings. So you see the little old ladies in Europe sometimes where they roll their stockings down below their knees.
You know what
I mean? So that's what she looked like. And I believe that was our lady's grandmother who was finally able to come through and bring her granddaughter across. So I can tell you I was there at the location probably a couple of weeks ago, and it was very, very clean. So I think that was a success, and I don't think that was a haunting that had anything to do with kinetic energy. I think that was an intelligent situation, and what we did would fall into the spirit rescue category.
I totally agree with that. Not very experienced at this, and I hope to get more experience with you. We'll hook up with some equipment and all that stuff. And I see, and I'm not sure if you're looking at your studio there, Leslie, I see that our caller has called in, and that I think that's our friend who's in the chat room, our friend from UFOria.
Okay, let me just pick that up here. I hope that is the case. Hello, you're on contact.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good. I'm so glad that you called in, James. Everybody out there in the interweb, this is our fearless leader of UFOria, Mr. James Borg, and of course our topic tonight, we're talking about spirit investigations, entity release, orbs, spirit photography. Now, James, you have an incredible amount of experience when it comes to being involved in psychic investigations, and you were, of course, featured on Creepy Canada, and your wonderful colleague, the lovely Carrie Chilcott, has worked a good deal with you in that area.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, Carrie's fantastic. Carrie's my right-hand person.
She's wonderful. Now, I know that we were talking a little bit earlier before you came in about intelligent haunts versus something that perhaps could be just trapped energy. Have you yourself experienced the difference in those types of occurrences, James?
A couple times. I'll give you an example. Port Credit, Ontario. By the lake shore, there's just a couple 4 to 5 story buildings, old, probably from the 1950s. A lot of residents move in and out of them all the time. Lady hears, so we were called in to investigate her hearing music. And the reason why she didn't like the music, it was heavy metal, was what she was hearing.
Really?
So here's how, and she didn't really notice stuff moving around, but she noticed a lot of stuff being missing, or if she placed the table a certain way, it'd be moved, right? Stuff like that. But she didn't witness any poltergeist activity with her eyes. But the biggest thing peeving her off was the heavy metal music, and it was the radio would come on, so she wouldn't hear it in her mind. It was actually the radios would come on and play heavy music, heavy metal music. So when we did the investigation, I kind of said, well, what type of music? And we kind of figured out it was actually AC/DC that came on. And it was always one song, Hell's Bells, right? Because it was the bell going boing, boing, right? And yeah, it was kind of freaky that way, right? And of course, she didn't like heavy metal at all. She was more or less in, like, country and western and stuff like that. And so that was kind of disturbing her. And the fact that the radio would go on by itself and play that. And one other thing we noticed, too, when that happened, it wasn't just that she'd have the dial on the radio tuned to a specific station. Well, it seemed like every time the Hell's Bells song would come on, it didn't matter what radio station. It could be Q, it could be KFG, London, or whatever radio frequency she could get in. If they're playing that song, the radio would turn on.
Wow.
Yes, that's kind of really freaky. Eh? It's you were talking about intelligent hauntings, And I think that's pretty intelligent in my mind, right? Like,
indeed, that some entity had a very specific agenda. Now, you mentioned, it had been, the place had been kind of like, for lack of a better term, kind of a flop house of people moving in and out. Do you think that there was an entity sort of trapped there who was into that kind of consciousness?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Of course, when we go and make an investigation, we ask a lot of questions, right? Like, before we do anything, it's just questions, 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 and we try to get the history of the place. And what I found was, I identified the song, I think it's Hell's Bells, okay? It's from the Back in Black album that came out in 1980. I happen to know a little bit about heavy metal music. And I said, okay, the first question I asked was, the landlord, has he owned the building? And the super, has he lived in the building and how long? Right? And she says, yeah, the super's been here for quite a long time. He's like, for years, right? And I said, okay. I said, maybe he was here in around 1980. And she goes, I think he was, because he was here in the 70s. I said, okay, well, that'd be a person we'd like to talk to, because he might have the history on who rented your apartment before you, of course, right?
Yes.
And bottom line, when we talked to him, he kind of pulled me in the corner and he goes, listen, he goes, I don't want to startle my resident because, you know, she's my resident. But, yeah, there was a hanging in that apartment.
Oh.
I said, what do you mean? He told me the story. A guy hung himself in the apartment. He was a guy in his 20s. And he was a guy who liked AC/DC and rock and roll, and I guess he had some problems in life.
Yeah.
And decided to exit the highway, I guess, so to speak, right?
Oh, my goodness. Now, did you guys,
yeah.
did you and Carrie do some kind of a cleansing, or were you able to make contact with the entity?
We didn't make contact. I announced in the room, I said, look, I'm sorry for your loss, because I kind of felt for him, too, because at that age, at that time in my age, I was right in the AC/DC, too, right? So, I mean, I kind of had I could relate to this guy, right? And I just basically talked to him in the room and without seeing him. I didn't know if he heard me or not. I think he did. And said, look, I feel for what you did and everything else. I wish you all the best. And I'm going to let my colleague, Carrie Chilcott, direct you to the light and find you some peace and tranquility. And at that point, Carrie just did her magic and got the smudge. She blessed. We had incense going, and Carrie took over that, right? Carrie's the best when it comes to that, right? So
yeah.
I did sort of the other things, right? But as far as like sending the spirits to the light, Carrie's the person, right?
Yes. She is really a very, very gifted, very psychic, very loving person. I can't say enough about her. I really have had a great connection with her the couple of times that we have met, and hope to do more work with her in the future for sure. Now, you know, here in Ontario, we get a lot of there's a lot of phenomena that seems to be associated with violated Native Canadian burial grounds. It seems as if, you know, housing developments have been built right on top of sacred spaces. And I have often wondered, and you can probably answer this for me, James, is why do you think I don't want to lump all Native American peoples into one big blob, because they're all individuals and have individual belief systems and what have you, but why is there such an attachment to where the resting place of their physical remains is? It seems to be an incredibly strong attachment because of the huge amount of phenomena that we have, particularly here in Ontario.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of native ghosts I've encountered as well. I won't dispute you on that. Especially in the Burlington area, Niagara on the Lake, Niagara Falls. I guess from Burlington all the way to the falls. I guess the War of 1812 had a lot to do with that, since a lot of natives did actually fight.
Yes,
on both sides actually. Maybe not too many people are aware of that.
And probably also, no Americans are even aware of that. If they are, I would be surprised that as you say, James, there were massive Native Canadian troops and massive Native American troops that were pitched against each other during the War of 1812.
Yes, there was, and a lot of them came from Quebec as well. They were carted in on horses to fight. And about Native Americans, you're right. They went through a lot of injustices. There was a lot of there's in Canada. I don't know if you're following the ITCCS. Kevin Annette,
yes.
He's talking. He wants justice for the natives and stuff like that, which
yes.
I support as well, by the way, because
yes.
it's horrific stories that are coming out about natives in schools and what's done to them and stuff like that. And also, I'll give you an example. There's in Burlington, I don't know if I should name the church because it's still in existence, but there is a church in Burlington. It's well known. It's very old. I guess I gave it away right there. But anyway, in the basement, they actually built the basement wall foundation with the bones of these Native Indians.
Oh my God. Are
exactly.
you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you, okay? And this church is still running today, all right? And it's like, you know, well, that's what we did and stuff like that. And, well, they're in the walls of the church. They're sanctified. They're okay, right? I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, buddy. I said, you just used body parts as your building material.
Yeah.
Like, would I do that to your grandfather or grandmother, or would you like your uncle to be part of the building when he dies? You know what I mean? And the priest looked at him stunned. And right away when I said that, he kind of wanted to end the conversation, right? And on the same church, there's a plot. It's about the total area of maybe 3 graves. And there's a sign saying this area is all the Native Indians that were buried here from the years 18-whatever to 18-whatever and blah, 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 right? But it doesn't say the names of the natives, doesn't say how many, so who knows? There might be like, you know, 100 to 200 bodies in that, you know,
three-grade
plot, right? And it's kind of sick, right?
Go ahead, James. You're just breaking up a bit.
Yeah, I feel as a ghost investigator and as a humanist, right, that's kind of rude, lewd, and uncalled for, right? Like, it doesn't matter what your faith or religion would be. Like, you're there as a cemetery. Have some decency about it, right? Right?
The Native American peoples that manifest and around the, you know, defiled graveyards, what we're probably really talking about here is not so much an attachment to the physical remains, but an outrage at the injustice and disrespect.
Exactly. And probably most of the native ghosts that you see, if you're able to see them or if you're able to pick them up, they're all mad about that. They're not mad about how they died. They're mad about the disrespect, that they were disrespected, right?
Yeah.
And, that's the one that makes them mad the most, right? And that's why they're probably still around, not in the light, because they're still, excuse my language, peeved off about the situation, right?
Yeah, they're in that feeling. The anger is inhibiting their ability to move into the next dimension. Oh my goodness!
Exactly.
Well, that is quite astonishing. So James, tell me a little bit about your own personal experiences. I know you're a very sensitive person. Did you have any experiences as far as sightings or encounters with ghosts when you were a child or growing up?
Yes, I did, Leslie. It started when I was 9 years old, and the very first ghost I seen was in my the house I grew up in.
Oh, where you lived again for a while? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I always seem to keep on going back there for some reason. But the Borg family residence, which is still a residence, it's still in Borg names or whatever. My mother lives there. And that house, The day my grandfather died, at around 3 in the morning when I was 9 years old, this is a freaky story. It was also the first time in my life at that time that I ever woke up from a sleep, and I had the urge to get a drink of milk. So I'm a 9-year-old boy walking down the hallway at around 3 in the morning, and I walk in the total darkness down the hallway. And to go into the kitchen, it forms like a T. If you go right, you go into the kitchen. If you go left, you go into the dining room. And if you go straight, it continues to the front door and living room part. As I was turning to go to the kitchen, I see a whitish image of my grandfather sitting on the dining room table. And I looked, and he kind of like nodded his head and waved at me.
Wow.
And then that was it, and he was gone. Right, but I stood there, and he basically cloaked out, and I stood there in the darkness, like, wow, whoa, Grandpa, right? Kind of like in shock. I was kind of frozen, right?
Did you know that he had passed, James? Did you know that your grandfather had passed, or was this something you learned the next day?
Not at all. What happened was I had my glass of milk. I went back to bed, and I couldn't sleep. At around 5:30, so I was up all night after this, at 5:30 the phone rings in the morning. As soon as the phone rings, I run up to my mom, and she's on the phone with somebody on the airline who happens to be in the nursing home where my grandfather's at. And before even the nursing home could tell her, I said, Grandpa's dead. And sure enough, that's exactly what she was phoning about. My grandfather had passed away. And my mother dropped the phone. I just told her before the nursing home told her.
Yeah.
And then she gathered her composure. Of course, that's her dad that just died, and my grandfather. And then we, a huge wave of sorrow hits us because, you know, it's our grandfather and her father, right? So.
Yeah.
That was the first time I saw that.
Wow. Well, our loved ones. You know, they sometimes want to let us know that everything's okay. They want to say goodbye. I know I had a very similar experience to what you're talking about when my brother passed away, which was about a dozen years ago. Well, it was longer. It was 15 years ago. Now, I knew that my brother had passed. However, you know, I was in grief and I certainly couldn't sleep. And I remember that I was watching, you know, I was watching a very favorite movie of mine. I heard footsteps coming. And my husband was asleep, by the way, completely out. So I heard footsteps coming down the hall. And it sounded, you know, my kids were pretty little at that time. It sounded too heavy, you know, for either of my boys. But I assumed it was my eldest son. So I called out and I said, "Christopher, is that you?" And then the door of my bedroom opened very slowly. And there standing in the doorway was my brother looking like, he looked like when he was about 20 years old. He was about 40 when he passed. So he looked young and radiant and healthy. And interestingly enough, I only remember being able to see kind of the upper part of his body. I don't remember that there were legs, you know, but he was sort of glowing. And he smiled at me with this beatific, wonderful smile. And then he was gone. Then just... I think I might have even have heard some crackling, like static electricity.
Okay.
And my two cats, you know, they were doing what I call Halloween cat. You know?
Yeah, okay.
And of course, my poor husband slept through the whole thing. He was very pissed off about that the next day because he wanted to see it and be there. But again, there was tremendous, like with your grandfather. There was tremendous love and is tremendous love between my brother and myself, and I'm the one that he chose to come and say goodbye to.
Wow. That's wild. It's I hear you there because my grandfather, I believe he is the only one that he reached out to, was myself.
Yeah, yeah. And
right?
you were wide open. You know, you were a child, and you were wide open, and you were probably, he probably even woke you up. You know, James, he probably even caused you to wake up and come into the kitchen in that way.
That's right.
I think he probably went out of his, I think he probably did his utmost to so that you wouldn't be frightened.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Because if I would have seen him in bed, it would have scared him, you know, the life out of
That would have been much weirder if he had just appeared in your bedroom, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Wes, have you, what did you say, James?
Yeah, exactly, because for me to be up a few moments and then actually walk down the hall and then see it, I'm already kind of like in a semi-conscious state rather than a deep sleep form of a half awake, half sleep state, right?
Indeed. So you weren't in shock, I guess, in the same way that I wasn't in shock. I was relaxed and kind of zoned out, but I was awake. So
exactly.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think that's exactly true. Now, Wes, I've never asked you this before, but when you were a young guy, I know you're very, very psychic, very perceptive. Did you have an experience where you saw a spirit when perhaps you were a child?
Well, the whole family, I think all of us have had those experiences. And when I was a kid, I used to think I saw things, and I wasn't sure if I saw them. And we were raised by my mom and grandmother. So my grandmother was on the opposite spectrum of believability, and I think that's because she used to read tea leaves, and she used to be successful at this. And so she warned us all off this whole topic, you know, do not think about these things. And it's like, why? And eventually it was because, well, I've done it, and it scared me. And it's like, well, this is, I'm not you. So we all had little experiences when we were children, and one I like to tell, it's not when I was a kid, it's when my mother died, because we're talking about these things right now. We were all doing the hospital bed vigil, and for those of our listeners who have not been through this, don't go through it if you can avoid it.
No kidding.
Yeah, we're all doing this hospital bed vigil, all gathered around my mother's dying body, because certainly she wasn't there anymore, but about 10 hours or 12 hours before she physically expired, I and a couple of others in the room felt a distinct wave of essence, our presence, move right into us. It was direct communication. It wasn't anything we had to think about. It wasn't anything logical. There was no apparent event with the body that we could see. It was, you know, about 12 hours before she actually died, or 10 hours, and it was just bang. And it was just pure peace of mind. And I left the room. I left the room at that point, and I wasn't devastated by it. I was actually quite thrilled by it. I left the hospital room and went into a waiting room and just sat there and thought to myself, that's her. That's her. She's left.
Wow.
Yeah. You felt
mm-hmm.
her go.
Absolutely.
I felt my dad leave when, you know, I was holding him in my arms when he passed. You know, it was the same kind of thing where his body just wouldn't, you know, just wouldn't give up. And but I definitely felt something happen. that's for sure. And it was a blessing to be there.
Yeah, you were really close with your dad too, from what I heard, Leslie, right?
I was very close to my dad, James. Yes, I was. I was very, very close to my dad. He was such a wonderful guy, and he really went too soon. But you know, he passed way too young from smoking related cancer. So you know me, I'm the woman with the mission. I want to get everybody to quit smoking. You're
going to
be one of my next victims, James Borg.
That's fine with me. That's not a problem. I think I'm ready to quit. So,
listen, if anybody can do it, I can do it. They call me at work the Velvet Hammer.
Right on. When you said hammer, that kind of has a very symbolic meaning to me. But anyway, that's hilarious.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen,
well,
I hope that
gonna...
we can all... Oh, go ahead, James.
You were in... No, Wes, you were in San Francisco recently too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And Leslie, you grew up... You spent a lot of time in L.A., right?
I did. I was born in New York, and when I was like a young teen, my family moved to Los Angeles, and my dad, so that my dad could become a comedy writer, and he ended up being an Emmy-winning comedy writer, you know, all kinds of television. So yes, so I grew up in L.A. I also lived in San Francisco for a chunk of time too.
Okay, perfect. The reason why I'm going to ask the both of you this question is I never been to California, believe it or not, but.
Uh-huh.
If I was to go and investigate hauntings and stuff like that, I think it would be kind of neat to investigate well-known people that have have had hauntings by well-known people. So my question to the you is, since you've both been in the California way, right, L.A.,
yeah.
San Francisco, that area, have you ever heard or investigated any stories of hauntings by famous people?
Oh, well, that's an emphatic yes on my end, James. And in fact, you know, my dear friend Lori Jacobson, who is a wonderful author, she's even written a book about famous hauntings. But when I was a young, you know, actor in Los Angeles, I was both a Universal Studios tour guide and an NBC page. So I spent a lot of time on sound stages and experienced some very creepy stuff. I always say the creepiest thing I experienced at Universal Studios happened in Nick Nolte's dressing room, but that's another story.
Wow.
That's
okay.
What I have to tell you offline.
Wow. He's had a little rough time here and there, eh?
Yeah, he was rough time.
Oh, my gosh.
He's the type of guy that lived in some bar or something like that.
But, James, if you were to go to Los Angeles, I could direct you to some areas, for instance, like the Roosevelt Hotel. I mean, I could direct you to a whole sort of a haunted tour. And also, San Francisco is incredibly active, although maybe not as active in the celebrity sense. But I think that the geophysical the geophysical properties of San Francisco make it like a battery. I mean, it has a unique energy, and it is just loaded with haunts. So either city that you wanted to visit, I could not only tell you where to go, but find people to go there with you.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. Yeah. One day I definitely want to venture out to California for sure.
All righty.
Well, magic land, isn't it, Leslie?
It is magic land, that's for sure. It is magic land. And, James, I just want to thank you so much for calling in. It's been such a delight to talk to you. I really appreciate it. We're just about to wind up the show. And once again, folks, I want you to look for the Euphoria Chronicles both on Facebook and on YouTube. And you're gonna see some amazing stuff that amazing interviews and other things that James Borg and his associates have collected for sure. And James, if anybody wants to become a member of Euphoria, the best way to get to you is through meetup.com. Is that correct?
Well, you know what? I'm gonna say this from now on in. Meetup.com, Euphoria, that's the private group. That's the group that we gather together and we have live meetings at someone's house in private, and we discuss stuff like topics like alien abductions and personal scenarios, and we can talk amongst ourselves. But
yes.
I'll give you the best way to reach Euphoria Chronicles from now on in would be basically to join the Facebook Euphoria Chronicles.
Okay.
And you join that. There's about 800 plus members now. And if you live in our areas of Southern Ontario and stuff like that, I'll contact you to join the main site. But Euphoria Chronicles on Facebook, it's in a melting pot of some really cool, amazing people that all have experiences as well. And we talk amongst ourselves. We post a lot of cool topics. And it's great. Right.
All right. So everybody go out there to Facebook and investigate Euphoria Chronicles. James Borg, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart tonight for jumping in and saving our show. Wes Roberts, thank you as well, sir, for everything you do.
Sure.
And we're going to say goodnight for now, folks. But remember, we are not alone. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.